You join us here inside Darren's house.
What? Where'd you come from? Get out!
Darren is about to play the Sunday Million prize draw on the NFL with Paddy Power Fantasy.
Sophie, it's that bloke from Paddy Power. He's got in the arse again.
It's just £9 to enter a competition that has £1.8 million in prizes to be won and £300,000 for the winner.
Listen, mate, get out of here before I...
Search Paddy Power Fantasy to pick your team. Last entry by 6pm Sunday. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning.
Get out! Don't you dare read those terms and conditions.
Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Right, I'm calling the police.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Good to have you with us, gang, as we get into week 11. We look back at Thursday night football. Myles Garrett kicking off and surely getting a lengthy ban for his on-the-field shenanigans. But another win for the Cleveland Browns. Are they somehow improbably going to run the table and make the playoffs? What about the Steelers dropping to 5-5? What about their playoff hopes as a result of that defeat? Well, guess what? Paul Nicholson, great, great darts player, one of the best in the world over recent years, massive NFL fan. Nico and I have worked together a lot over the years. He's a big Steelers fan. Who'd have thunk that? It's like we fixed it. He is dropping by ESPN Tower shortly to get into that game. We'll talk about Kaepernick and we'll preview all the Week 11 matchups. Don't forget, our daily fantasy league rolls on this weekend. You can enter, free to enter, at the Paddy Power website. There's a big cash prize pool, so you can win cash prizes. Lots of you did last week, so get involved with it. fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show. You just pick players, 60 grand budget, players from the 6 o'clock games, put your team, pit them against other listeners, pit them against us, and you can win some cash prizes. fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show. Don't fear, we'll roll that out through our social media channels, and you check the biog on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at the NC Show. You'll find the link to get involved before 6 o'clock on Sunday. Right, speaking of which, let's get straight in to the Week 11 preview show with Paul Nicholson. Paul Nicholson, welcome to ESPN HQ.
Thank you very much for having me. It's really good to be here.
Now, you and I first worked together a couple of years back, I think. But by that said, you already knew that we both loved the NFL. And you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so it's like... It is like it is aligned in the stars that you are in here today, Friday, right after the chaotic Thursday night football that we've just seen.
Oh, well, what more can I say? I mean, I said to you just before we came on the air that nothing that happens this weekend is going to cheer me up, because Thursday night football just disappointed on so many levels. But being a Steelers fan this year has been ups and downs, mostly ups the last 4 weeks, but... Yeah, we're definitely down today, and we've got a little bit of time to recover, hopefully.
Well, I want to get into that in a bit. I want to talk about whether you think the Steelers, at 5-5, still alive and kicking on paper, particularly in a wide-open AFC wildcard race, can make the playoffs. But we've got to start with the game itself, and in particular what happened in the dying embers of the game, which was pretty unpalatable to watch, without trying to get sanctimonious about this. But Myles Garrett lost it. He lost his head. And for those of you who haven't seen at the end of the game, Garrett got involved with Mason Rudolph, swung a helmet at Rudolph, which hit him. Some of the Steelers got involved. I think it was Pouncey and DeCastro, right? And Pouncey in particular then piled in to Myles Garrett. So it was all quite unpleasant to watch. But if you look at the footage beforehand, and this isn't condoning what Myles Garrett did at all, right? But you look at the footage beforehand, Mason Rudolph instigated the altercation, didn't he? So he's not entirely free from blame here either.
No, he's not. I've been looking at the footage a lot this morning, and I'm not really surprised that it was instigated by Mason Rudolph, quite frankly. And as a Steelers fan, I wanted to come onto the show today and not cast Myles Garrett out. He's not that kind of guy usually. He's a great, great player. It's just unfortunate that he's at the Browns, really. But his actions were instigated by our Mason Rudolph, and the reason why Mason Rudolph was so the way he was because he had such a terrible game. Let's not cast anything over it. The guy has been unacceptable through the last 3 weeks.
So four picks for Rudolph. It was the defense dictated the win for the Browns. That's not to take away from the offense. Nick Chubb in particular, once again carrying stuff, and Baker made some plays. He wasn't where they want him to be, but he certainly wasn't where he has been for a lot of this season. But it was the defense that took care of business. How disappointed were you? And look, James Conner went out, Juju Smith-Schuster went out, so Rudolph's hands were tied. He had a very limited deck to play with. But how disappointed were you with losing this game with the Steelers' season right in the balance and the offense performing so badly.
Really disappointed with the way that the team responded offensively to the challenge of what happened when they were 14-0 down. I mean, I've got to pay a lot of respect to Baker Mayfield with that fake on the second touchdown, which was a worldie. It really sold our defense like a kipper. But going forward, I thought that this would be a close game, like it usually is with Steelers matches. But there were certain aspects of this game that made me realize that our offense is really inept. Mm. And particularly when we were 7 points behind, and that pick that was thrown by Rudolph to James Washington, who he constantly looks for. I know he's a former college teammate of his, and everybody's got to have their go-to targets.
Sure.
But he's been neglecting Juju a lot in the last few weeks, whether Juju's been double covered or not. Mm. And he automatically looks for Washington. He did on this particular down, and he's thrown to this guy low across the middle and a double coverage. It was a suicide pass, and it just goes to show that Rudolph, for me, is not the guy to be leading our offense right now.
Okay, we'll get into that in a bit. Just a final note on the Browns, who improved to 4-6 with this win. Now, Garrett is going to be suspended. There's no doubt about that. There's talk of 4 games, maybe longer, that he could be out for as well. Expect Pouncey, I reckon, to get a ban as well. But Garrett's going to bear the brunt of it, you would imagine. Mm. So that is going to affect what I'm about to ask next. They could still make the playoffs mathematically. If you check out, go to ESPN.co.uk, there is a playoff simulator. You start to work out which teams might make the playoffs and final records and calculate that. Mathematically, they could. There's only one other team that's done it in the modern era since 1970 to go 2-6 and then make the playoffs. And that was the Bengals, I think. Speaking of which, the Browns have the Bengals twice. They have the Dolphins. They have the Cardinals. The Steelers again at Heinz Field. That is going to be pretty tasty. And the Ravens. So the Ravens is the one that optimistic Browns fans will think, well, we could probably win all of the others, but the Ravens is going to be a tall order. It's not even in week 17 where you might think the Ravens could be resting a lot of their starters. Week 16, I believe. So it occurred to me that two very Brownsian things could happen. They could run the table apart from one game, but beat the Ravens and lose one of those games to the Bengals, or they run the table, they get to 10-6 and they still don't make the playoffs. So either of those things could also happen, of course.
Yeah, anything can happen in the AFC North. And as far as the Steelers are concerned, they've got a pretty decent run in, but there's a couple of teams in there who are going to cause us major, major problems. One is Baltimore.
Let's get into that. Forget the Browns. Are the Steelers going to make the playoffs? Can the Steelers at 5-5 still make the playoffs?
They can, but I don't think they will, for two reasons. One, I think their confidence is going to be completely sapped after this defeat to the Browns. And what's more, we've got really serious injuries in key positions. Our defense this year has been exceptional. Mm. I think I'm such a huge fan of Bud Dupree. I think he's a fabulous, fabulous player. Minka Fitzpatrick coming in has been unbelievable.
Deal of the decade, Minka Fitzpatrick. He's got to be up there. And it won't be a surprise to Bama fans, to Dolphins fans. And you're looking at one, certainly how good a player he is. We knew about his versatility and about his playmaking ability, but he has been exceptionally good for the Steelers.
Yeah, he's been brilliant. And we've always looked to replace two players from our previous great days. One was Troy Polamalu and one was Heath Miller. We haven't replaced Heath Miller,
right,
and we've suffered because of that. But we have now got a guy legitimately in that slot that can fill the boots of Troy Polamalu. And that will help Devin Bush as well as a rookie. He can learn from Minka Fitzpatrick. And that secondary can get better because it has been very slack the last few seasons. That's where we've lost a lot of games.
But you're winning a lot of games defensively now. And it's understandable why. Like, when you're losing Roethlisberger, Mason Rudolph you're not a fan of.
No.
You've had injuries, James Conner, Juju's now in concussion protocol. So you've had a very loaded deck in that respect. But at 500, you look at your run-in, what are we thinking? 10-6 to be safe for a while? But even then, it may not be as clear-cut as that with so many teams bunched around. You've got a reasonably straightforward as it can get in the NFL. Compared to other teams, you've got a reasonably positive run-in. Can you still make the playoffs, do you think?
We can, but I'm feeling very negative this morning about our chances. I think the defense has got to have a really solid few weeks from here and continue what they've done. But I think Mike Tomlin has got to really speak to this offense, and he's got to say, right, you guys have got to step up. You've got to make some players now. If they're not making players, then we are going to get drugged by other defenses. Mm. We go to somewhere like Baltimore, we're going to get absolutely slammed if we don't take the catches, if we don't run the football. And I was saying to you earlier on, Nat, that when Devlin Hodges came in, you know, when Mason went into concussion protocol himself, we actually looked like the Steelers for the first time in such a long time. It's almost like Duck came in and said, why don't we play some Steeler football? We went over to Los Angeles and played a Steelers game, and I was loving it. It was close. It was smart football. And if you look at the Twitter pages out there of Steelers fans, they are crying for him to be put back into the side.
Do you think the majority of Steelers fans would rather see him start the rest of the season than Mason Rudolph?
Yes, absolutely. I think Rudolph is making too many mistakes. He's throwing too many picks, and he doesn't look sure when he's out of the gun as well.
Do you think he might, Tomlin that is, might make a change after the Browns performance?
I think he might. I think bringing someone like Devlin Hodges back into the lineup just to refresh things and say, you know, why don't we go back to what we did in LA? I think that might be the right thing to do going forward. And yes, Mason Rudolph was given the helmet when Ben went out with his elbow at the beginning of the season. It was the right thing to do at the time, but the right thing to do right now is to give it to Devlin.
How good a season is Mike Tomlin having when you consider that when Roethlisberger went down and it looked like, much as everybody was saying with Jacksonville when Foles went down, well, that's the end of the season then. And not only have the Steelers rallied, we're having this conversation now in week 11. Can the Steelers make the playoffs? Which is improbable given what was happening and what was being discussed in the early phases of the season. How much of that is down to Mike Tomlin? How much credit should Mike Tomlin be getting? And indeed, if you do make the playoffs, is Mike Tomlin a potential candidate for Coach of the Year, given what he's doing?
Well, if we're talking about that in a few weeks, I'll be very happy. But I'm a huge fan of Tomlin. I think he's straight talking. I think he does a lot of things without a hot head. I think he lets the dust settle, then he makes smart decisions in the following days. And one of the greatest things about the Steelers organization is that they don't take things really quickly. They just let things absorb, and then from there they make smart decisions. We don't have big turnover in coaching staff. Right. We believe in what we have, and Mike Tomlin is the right guy to coach the Steelers right now. I think he's done an amazing job after a really sketchy start and really tough with Ben going out early, because there was a lot of positivity with a fabulous defense, and the reaction of what's happened with, you know, putting Devlin in when Mason went out, and you know, the way he's worked with Butler about, you know, getting this defense as one of the best in the NFL. I think Tomlin deserves all the credit. If we're talking about Coach of the Year, then if he gets us to the playoffs, he probably deserves it considering where we are right now.
Let's move on to another big story before we pick our Week 11 games and look at some of the big matchups this weekend. We talked about it on Wednesday's pod, Mike and I, that is Colin Kaepernick. That's when the story broke around about, and it has developed since then. So the NFL announced earlier in the week that Kaepernick is doing a workout for as many teams of the 32 teams that want to send representatives as possible. 11 teams have signed up for this. The workout is happening on Saturday. At the time of recording this, 11 teams have said we're going to send front office or coaching personnel to check it out. Arizona, Atlanta, Cleveland, Denver, Detroit, Miami, New England, the Giants, the Jets, Tampa Bay, and Washington. So your Steelers haven't signed up yet. They've already committed to attend. We expect a few more, of course. It's probably going to be a snowball effect. Difficulty in terms of who exactly from the organization can attend. Obviously, the head coaches and any of the coaching staff, core coaching staff can't. But front office can, and there is talk that all these teams are sending representatives to this workout where Kaepernick will be worked out. He will have interviews as well for all of those that want to sit down and talk to him. There are going to be receivers set up from the Atlanta area. That's where the workout is going to take place. Hugh Jackson, the former Cleveland Browns head coach, is going to coordinate things. So the glare of the media, the world's media, will be on this as well. So does this mean, Paul Nicholson, that Colin Kaepernick is going to play in the NFL again?
I don't think that's anywhere close right now. I think it does depend on the skill set that he can show in this workout. I don't think there's any disputing the fact that Kaepernick was a very special athlete when he came in as a second string quarterback at San Francisco, and he showed a very exciting brand of quarterback. And that run to the Super Bowl was no accident. He's a fabulously mobile athlete. But ultimately the politics took over, didn't it? And since then, we don't know what kind of athlete Colin Kaepernick is.
He says, his people say, he's been keeping in shape. He is as fit as he's ever been. Certainly in terms of conditioning, he is going to say that, tell that story.
Of course,
there's a fundamental difference keeping fit and being in the game. He'll probably be the first to admit that and to recognise that. And if he does come back to the game, it would be a significant leap of faith for teams in the same way, not dissimilar to when a head coach is out of the game for a long time. And you think, well, are they too distanced from the game to come back in and make a difference? But Kaepernick is a young man. He is, by all accounts, keeping his edge on in that respect. Do you think this is one big PR stunt? Or do you think there's a little bit more substance to it than maybe could meet the cynical eye at first?
I think it's 90% publicity stunt, but I think 10% of this, and we have to not ignore this 10%, is the fact that he could come back and he could make a difference. Now, we didn't know a lot about Kaepernick when he first came into his big run with the San Francisco 49ers. So what's to say that his story is not going to be told and have another chapter? I'm not going to bat against this guy because if he... I mean, he said that he was keeping himself fit. He's in the best shape he's ever been. Well, he's bound to say that, isn't he? He's not going to say that he's a dud. So
coming back out in bars, having a few. No, fair enough. But I guess also the evolution, certainly the progression of NFL offenses, even in the last 2 to 3 years, and the quarterbacks that are particularly succeeding at the moment, that probably plays into Kaepernick's hands a little bit in terms of the skill set he has as a quarterback. That you look at whether it's Watson, whether it's Jackson, you know, you look at the running skills of Josh Allen, forget his limitations in the air, the way that and so many other examples, the way that offenses are evolving definitely, I think, plays to his strengths, doesn't it?
Definitely. I think when he started upping the stats on rushing yards for a quarterback, everybody started taking notice about, you know, you can change your brand of football based on what kind of quarterback you have. You look at the kind of quarterbacks that Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger are there, sitting in the pocket kind of guys, finding the right solution.
Not the most mobile.
No, but then you look at someone like Russell Wilson at Seattle and what he's changed at Seattle and how they bulldozed their way to a Super Bowl. And Kaepernick is part of this generation of quarterbacks. If he's in great shape and he still has the eye and the speed, there's probably a team out there who are going to take a chance on him. And if you remove all of the political stuff and he's still a good enough athlete, then there are teams out there who have got this need.
Mike Carson made the point on our podcast on Wednesday, which I thought was a really salient one, that it could be a combination of things. Yes, a PR stunt. There's certainly positive PR value for the NFL to be seen, given what's happened over the last few years, to be involved in something like this. But it could also have a very constructive end result for Kaepernick. Furthermore, he went as far as to say, this is perhaps a statement by the NFL to say, irrespective of whether you believe there has been collusion or otherwise, we are now drawing a line under what has happened in the last few years, and Colin Kaepernick is on the market with our blessing.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I think there are other players out in the sort of cloud nine of football who are great athletes still, who will probably look at the situation and think, well, maybe if it works out for Kaepernick, maybe it could work for me too. It's not for the same reasons, of course, but if you look at someone like Antonio Brown, who's been in the headlines for the wrong reasons this year, if you would have put him out there, and I think there are people who would want him as an athlete to play for their football team. And that's the most important thing for me right now, in my opinion. Kaepernick, if he's good enough, then there will be a team out there who will take him. And are they willing to take on the, say, political baggage maybe that comes with Kaepernick? Well, if you've got the right coach who's going to use him the right way and the right offensive coordinator, then I think if he's the right athlete for that team, then he could be a real success story. This could be a game... He could be the game changer of the last 20 years based on how he plays and what he's gone through. So I think you're right. I think the NFL want to draw a line under this and then they want to move on. And with anything of this magnitude, sometimes you have to draw a line under it and just move on to what everybody wants, and that's football.
You look at the rosters around at the moment, not specifically the starters, although Kaepernick will say he feels that he can start in the NFL, but you look at the rosters and the depth chart, the backup quarterbacks, teams that carry three quarterbacks, there is no argument, is there, that Kaepernick, in terms of quality alone, deserves a spot on a roster.
I think absolutely right. You look at what's happening in my team. You know, we've got Ben Roethlisberger in a sling on the sidelines, and you've got a second-string quarterback that I wouldn't toss into the Cincinnati Bengals. No disrespect to anybody who's a Bengals fan. But Hodges is our third string, and he's decent.
Yeah,
I reckon if Mike Tomlin said to, you know, the Steelers organization, I can manage this guy, and he brought his brand of football, it would be exciting. If he was to come through this workout and he has the confidence and a coach has the confidence to take him on, I have no doubt that Kaepernick would fit in somewhere that would give him the freedom in the backfield to say, you know what, why don't you go out there and prove to us that you can still do it? There may be a team at the early part of next year who haven't got a great deal of talent on their roster who's saying he's worth the gamble. I think he may just play NFL next season.
All right, let's get into our Week 11 picks. Starting with the big E, the big game of the weekend, no doubt about it. Texans, Ravens, Deshaun Watson versus Lamar Jackson. These are two MVP candidates, electrifying performers to boot, two of the most exciting quarterbacks in the NFL right now, two playoff-bound teams. Before we started recording, I said I had a stat for you that blew my tiny mind and might blow yours as well, and I held it, so I saved it for the show. So check this out. In terms of average yards per game, 301.2 for Deshaun Watson, 304.2 for Lamar Jackson. 18 passing touchdowns for Deshaun Watson and 5 rushing touchdowns. 15 and 6 for Lamar Jackson. Passer rating 107.1 for Deshaun Watson, 101.7 for Lamar Jackson. They are neck and neck on virtually every statistic. Yep. And moving outside of statistics to the intangibles, they are significant game changers for their teams, which isn't always a given, of course. You can have a very prolific and productive player that doesn't have that X factor that you can change a game. And these are two players that can absolutely turn a game on its head with one play.
I think these guys are game changers. They're blueprint guys for now football. I think this is the kind of quarterback that people are searching for. I think the Ravens, who it's really hard for me to talk about this because being a Steelers fan.
I can feel that, I can see
that. it's distension. But when it comes to Baltimore right now, you've got to respect them. And the way that the Ravens sent Joe Flacco away and gave Lamar the chance, boy, is he taking it with both hands. He has changed the entire attitude of that offense. Because let's face it, the Ravens were predominantly a defensive team, and they had a half decent offense, but they won games with brilliant defense.
And they've been like that for years and years, right? I mean, since the early noughties, right? That is what, you know, the Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, Super Bowl winning teams, and they've, you know, T Suggs, the kind of next generation of the crossover. That's what they've always been based on.
Yeah, but I think they're brave enough to have this move on culture of, I think, what is the next generation of Baltimore football? And they've recognized that changing from Flacco to Jackson was the right call. They've gone all eggs in one basket, and boy, has it paid off. He is a solid guy. He's a game changer. But I think not just making plays like the stuff he did against New England, but he's doing stuff without mistakes. He's making very little in the way of mistakes.
Both of them are very good. Both of them, the ones that I had omitted, actually, only 5 interceptions for each player as well. So
that's,
they're both protecting the ball very, very carefully. I'd apply all of that that's a nonsensical thing to say, but I'd apply all of that to Deshaun Watson insofar as he is, I think, changed the dynamic of this Houston side. He is just marveling from a couple of weeks back at Wembley. I mean, he absolutely bossed that game. He was unstoppable. The Jags, the front seven, were doing everything they were being asked to do. Calais Campbell at least twice had his arms wrapped around him, and somehow Deshaun Watson was breaking away from a tackle from Calais Campbell and still completing a pass. The week before, he completed a pass when he was kicked in the eye and he couldn't see his receiver. I mean, this guy is phenomenal. So here's a question for you, Nico. You're starting a franchise today. Mm-hmm. You are the front office GM head honcho. Who are you going with?
Oh, on the spot stuff. First one that comes to mind is Jackson, because he's just so quick and he's got great ball security as well, which I think they're two words that everybody's uttering right now because there's just so many fumbles going on in the league. He's got great ball security when he really goes for it. So I'd probably go with him right now. He reminds me a bit of Cam Newton when he was really going for it in that NFC Championship.
The MVP season.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He just reminds me a lot of him, especially when, you know, the picture circulates of him with the sunglasses on the sideline.
Yeah.
He's got that little bit of arrogance, but not too much. Maybe not at Cam Newton level, because I'm not sure that anybody has. But
you, I mean, to be you, there are parallels with you and Cam Newton, certainly in terms of your wardrobe.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
Come on, you are surely the darts equivalent of Cam Newton in terms of sartorial elegance.
Flamboyance. I'm no Peter Wright. No, he's definitely out there.
Maybe that is more of a close call. So, in terms of Sunday's game, the Texans, of course, coming off a bye after Wembley week, so that's something to bear in mind here. Keep an eye on their injury report as well, because both Will Fuller and Laremy Tunsil, key players in different reasons in the offense, are questionable. There's talk from the Texans camp they should both start, and certainly Tunsil fundamental there because of the improvement of the Texans line, which has been their Achilles heel, certainly in the Deshaun Watson era. Even going into this season, the start of the season, the early weeks, that line was porous, but it's got better and stronger, and that's going to obviously be a key battle. If they can protect Deshaun Watson is one thing, but it's also the ground game they've established as well. If you look at the Houston run game, fourth in the NFL on the ground, it was something that Harbaugh picked out and celebrated. So it isn't just about the pass protection here. It's also about establishing the ground game that we saw so effectively against the Jags a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, they've got a really good culture at Baltimore of blocking the run game, but it's about how they step up this week. I think the Ravens look at this game as almost like a mini playoff game. It's a really good preparation for them to see how they're going to perform in the playoffs. Because let's face it, they are going to win the AFC North. No one's going to catch them. And are they a genuine playoff team? We've seen other people who have had fantastic regular seasons, but when it came to the playoffs, they absolutely disintegrated. And yes, I'm going to use the Cincinnati Bengals again.
Sure.
Because they couldn't win in the playoffs if they were given a 50-point head start. That's the way it works.
They probably would win if they were given a 50-point head start. I'd say probably.
But I think if Harbaugh was to say to his locker room this week, this is an audition to see how we can do genuinely this season to get the Lombardi. Mm. And I think the Ravens are going to be up for this. I think the win against New England has just shown us that they are for real.
I think you can apply all of that to the Texans. Now, I think probably at the moment, given, as you say, the win against the Patriots in particular, and I guess looking at the injury concerns that the ones I've identified short-term, but then the long-term injury with no J.J. Watt, which is obviously fundamental, right? When you have a generational talent like him out, the Texans are going to feel that they are in the hunt. Certainly they will. I would be astonished if they didn't make the playoffs, but in the hunt for a deep playoff run. But at the moment, they're probably in that chasing pack behind the Ravens, the Patriots, and the Chiefs. They're probably the top three in the AFC, and I think the Texans are in towards the top of the next group. But I think they're going to have the same mindset going into this. I think if you're going to be a team that's going to topple or represent in the championship, that, and you're not the Patriots or the Chiefs, who, despite their flaws this season, are still the top two power rankings, I think this is a really good statement win for them if they can take down the Ravens.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. But the Texans are pretty used to not having JJ the last few seasons because he's had so many injuries. So they've learned to adapt their defense because of the lack of TJ's big brother.
Yes.
So for me, that's hard for me to say that considering how good TJ is.
Yeah.
But I think the Texans will have the same mindset. I think everybody who, it doesn't matter who you follow in the NFL, I think everybody's got an eye on this game because it could happen again at some point.
Yeah.
And whoever comes out on this one, because the Ravens will be favourite being in Baltimore, I think if the Texans can get a win here, that'll be the equivalent of what the Ravens did at New England.
Absolutely right.
So
I couldn't agree more. Think other bats to keep an eye on briefly on this one. You look at the Baltimore ground game as well. I mean, I was highlighting the Texans ground game. Baltimore, the only team that have got two players with over 600 rushing yards and six touchdowns this season. One of them is their quarterback and, of course, Mark Ingram. So a real tag team punch on the ground there as well. So a lot will get sorted out, as it always is, in the trenches. And if one of these teams can hold firm and prevent the ground game being established by the other team, it is going to, I think, not just be significant, but determine the course of this game.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think that there's going to be small margins in this. I think the Ravens crowd is going to be very, very loud for this one. Mm. They're going to almost treat this like a Steelers game because the rest of the AFC North are gone. They're going to look at who have we got to really step up against now. And this game is just tailor-made for probably game of the season.
Yeah,
I think small margins, it could come down to one mistake by somebody in whatever part of the field. One fumble, one pick could determine this, but I'm just really looking forward to watching it.
Which way are you picking?
I'm going to go Ravens by three.
Ravens by three. And I like that. Nico's bringing in Harry. Look at this. He's bringing in points as well.
Yeah, I think by three, I think it'll probably come down to the last kick.
Wowzers. I've been out of my game here. Okay, I'm thinking about spreads here. I think I've been backwards and forwards on this game all week. I think Houston get the road win.
Interesting.
On the basis that Tunsil starts, can I have a little asterisk there? On the basis their offensive line is fit,
I think that's very fair.
I think the Texans sneak it on the road. That could come back to haunt me, that pick.
Controversial.
Yeah, there we go. All right. We're just waiting for Ravens fans to hit me up on Twitter. All right, on to the Saints-Bucks, which has high scoring, free-wheeling craziness written all over it, doesn't it?
when does the Saints game not
last week, right, is maybe a great example there, because everyone thought the Saints-Falcons would be, well, it was a question of, this will be over 50 points if the Falcons can get their offense going. It turns out they could get their offense going, and the Saints absolutely could. An extraordinary game, really, and I'm not using that description lightly. This is, in terms of the Sean Payton, Drew Brees era, one of the most baffling performances I've ever seen from a Saints offense. They didn't score a touchdown. They were utterly perplexed. They didn't establish any kind of ground game. They didn't even seem to try to establish a ground game. And this is against an Atlanta Falcons side that at the time was, well, still is, I think, one of the worst in the NFL. They've gone up in stock since that win. But it's not as if the Saints were blown out of the water by the Ravens, by the Patriots, by a contender. It's by one of the teams that are in junk time mode at the moment. So what on earth went wrong?
I really don't know. And in sports, sometimes you wake up and you feel invincible, but it just doesn't happen. And that's in any sport. You could look at some guys who, you know, were really, really hot, and then all of a sudden nothing happens. Look at someone like Cooper Kupp, for instance.
In my fantasy team, of course, you will find out when I hook up with the OG for our fantasy show tomorrow, he will rub my nose in.
Yeah, he goes a game over 200 yards to a game where he gets nothing.
Zero.
And it's not through ineptitude. Sometimes it's just because it doesn't happen and you have to adapt. And that's the beautiful thing about NFL. It's the fact that it's not just about your big guys like, you know, Jackson and Ingram, like we've already mentioned, or Roethlisberger and Hines Ward back in the day. Sometimes it's about someone stepping up and doing something that you think, oh, okay, so he can play too.
It's different for you though, right? So just looking at you for a minute in terms of your career, because you're in a 1v1, in a 1v1 environment, it is a little bit different, I guess. But you must have had that, right? Where you've been, I guess, even within a tournament, playing lights out and thinking, this is my tournament, I've got this, and then rocking up on stage and your game completely deserts you.
Yeah, that happened to me at last year's World Darts Championship with Ali Pali. I felt so ready when I was backstage, went up there, and I couldn't have hit a barn door with a hedgehog.
Yeah,
it was just one of those times. But there were other moments where I was in the practice room and getting genuine anxiety because I was practicing so poorly.
Right.
And then you go on stage.
It's like Kevin Costner in Tin Cup.
Pretty much. And you get that burst of adrenaline when you grace the stage, or grace the field in this case. And you just think, that's exactly what I needed. Mm. That little jolt of adrenaline was enough to make everything okay. But sometimes with veterans in team sports, they're so used to those bursts of adrenaline that they just can't get it from anywhere, and it just doesn't happen. Sport is a funny thing, and it's so unpredictable, and that's why we love it. If it was predictable, it wouldn't be fun.
Well, precisely, and it's going to be a hard one to call this. I mean, I do think it will be a shootout. I think that the Saints will come back, and you just got to bear in mind that the stats we're talking about here with Tampa Bay, who are an eminently watchable side because they put up a lot of points. They're in the, where are they? Third in the NFL right now, averaging almost 29 points a game. But they're dead last in terms of points conceded. So you can be pretty sure that there are going to be points on the board when the Bucks play. And I think the Saints are not going to have back-to-back weeks where they struggle to the degree that they did. Sean Payton is too good a head coach to allow that to happen. So I think this is going to be a shootout. The question is, can the Bucks keep up the pace with the Saints, do you think?
Well, it is in Tampa Bay, this game. So you've got to give them a fighting chance. But for me, the Saints are just so much more consistent than the Bucks are. And how can you bat against Peyton and Drew Brees? I mean, Drew Brees is a living legend, and he's chasing stats records and all this kind of stuff as well. He's not single-minded, Drew Brees. He is team motivated, and the clock is ticking on his career. He wants that second ring, and I think if he's going to get it, he may have to do it in the next sort of just over a year.
It feels like there's a window there. A couple of things on this. I mentioned that the The Saints couldn't establish their running game last week against Atlanta. Alvin Kamara in particular, absent again. No scrimmage touchdowns in four straight games. That's the longest streak of his career. Let's keep an eye on that. And this is a decent Tampa Bay, a relatively decent Tampa Bay run D, right? They're pretty much the only team that's kept McCaffrey in check this season, right? So the other thing that we've got to keep an eye on is Marshon Lattimore. Now, that was quite a significant part of the game last week when Lattimore went out. I think that really tipped the balance. And remember, this is a game that you've got Godwin and Evans, two absolute beasts, playing against this Saints secondary. Lattimore, it was a hammy, so he didn't practice on Wednesday. He is a touch-and-go start, I think, as well. And the other injury report I noticed for this game, Andres Pete, who's a pro bowler, of course, he broke his arm in the game against the Falcons, so he won't be playing on Sunday, out for an extended period of time. So that line will be a little bit affected as well, going back to that establishing the ground game Kamara situation. So lots of positives for Tampa Bay here, but in the end, I think Atlanta, I think New Freudian slip, New Orleans are going to be too strong for them. In a thriller, in a shootout, I'm taking the Saints.
Well, if you look at some of the shootouts that New Orleans have had in the last two or three seasons, they seem to come out on top on more of those kind of games than they lose.
Right.
I think they know how to get it done in the fourth quarter, and I think sometimes it's about the kahunas that Drew Brees has. That's why they get over the line more often than not. And what we said earlier about people stepping up, when people are getting injured and, you know, broken arms and ACLs and these kinds of things happen to people who've been playing constantly for the last 10 weeks, what you find now is that people are starting to be promoted and the coaches are saying to these players, now it's your time to show how good you are.
Yeah.
And if they want to play for their careers, they've got to perform right now.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they're going to go back to the practice squad, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Who are you picking?
I'm not going to bat against Brees.
No.
I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
If I could have taken him at Pittsburgh, oh boy, the sky was the limit.
Yeah,
but
right.
I'm going to go Saints probably by 7-10 here.
Oh, again, Harry's dropping he's dropping the dimes in terms of the point spread. I've got to up my game. All right, next up. Interesting game, I think. Broncos at Vikings. Interesting because some people think, is there a danger this is a trap game for the Vikings? Kirk Cousins finally wins in prime time, finally gets the monkey off the back, but doesn't get the credit for it. It wasn't Kirk Cousins that won the game for the Vikings against Dallas. It was lots of other areas of the field. Dalvin Cook had his back again. The defense had his back again, yada, yada, yada. So
yeah.
Kirk Cousins, just want to throw something at you. In the last six games, Nico, he has completed around 72% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, just one pick. His passer rating, almost 125. Yet nobody's buying Kirk Cousins. I think the Vikings and Kirk Cousins in particular, see how my voice went squeaky when I said that, and Kirk Cousins in particular, I think they are a sneaky deep run pick. And I think it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Vikings are in the Super Bowl this season and Kirk Cousins and the opinion of Kirk Cousins is completely revised. This idea that he can't win a big game just because he hasn't so far with quite limited career opportunities, I think is nonsense.
I think Kirk Cousins could do something quite special this year.
Agreed.
You look at the stats that you just mentioned, and if you were to have him right next to you right now, he'd have a big grin on his face because what he's doing right now is he's going under the radar.
Yep.
And people who do that genuinely do well.
Yep.
If you look at someone, for instance, who had this reputation and they're expected to lead their team to a Super Bowl, someone like Joe Flacco after he took Baltimore to a Super Bowl, he was expected to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing with Kirk Cousins, he's not expected to do this, and people are probably not picking him for fantasy teams and things like that because they're expecting him to have a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not expecting to have a shocker right now because he's got this ghostly confidence that isn't really being seen until you see the stat sheet. So I think Minnesota are a fabulous franchise.
Balanced.
They do really well. I think when Bridgewater was the quarterback there, there was a bit of uncertainty as to what was going to happen. I think getting rid of him and then actually getting Cousins in and saying, you know what, you're our number one guy. I want you to run this team. I think it showed Kirk that we're going to give you a home.
Yeah.
And since then, he's actually just crept up and just got a little bit better every game. And he's starting to show it now.
Yeah.
I think they're a fabulous outfit.
I think they are the real deal, you know. And it's really, the penny's kind of dropped the last couple of weeks at reading these narratives again and again. And look, I get the parallels with, say, Romo, you know. But if you look at some of those, you know, Romo could never win a playoff game. You look at some of those you know, some of those situations, freakish fine lines, fine margins, and we could suddenly build this narrative. And I appreciate sometimes that can become self-perpetuating, yeah. That it starts to play on your mind. And there is that talk that Kirk Cousins suffers from anxiety and people are joining the dots. And maybe there is a self-perpetuation here that if he's aware of this negative perception of him as a player that in the clutch situation freezes, panics, can't deliver, can beat up the mediocre teams on a rainy Tuesday night in Stoke, but can't do it in prime time. Maybe that will have, even it didn't actually exist, but will start to exist because everybody's telling him it exists. But I'm not buying it, and I'm buying Kirk Cousins. I think the Vikings are a serious proposition this season,
yeah.
And they win easily against the Broncos.
Yeah, I think they do as well. I think the Broncos, there's just a bit too much uncertainty there right now for them to get this kind of road win. And we've got to mention the climate conditions, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at what it was like in Green Bay last week. It's going to be very, very cold. I know that Minnesota have got that problem pretty much nutted with the new stadium, but I just get the feeling that the Vikings are a much more confident outfit right now than the Broncos, and I cannot see any way that Denver get a result here.
Did you say nutted?
Nutted.
First use of nutted on the show this season, so I'll give you a fist bump for that. Let's go to Patriots-Eagles. Interesting, intriguing game, of course. A resurgent Eagles now 5-4 off a bye week, as are the Patriots. Bill Belichick, the absolute master off a bye week. Surely you can't put an argument forward to say that the Eagles win this, right? Even though they're at home, even though they are firing back into the playoff race in recent weeks, nobody backs against Belichick off a bye week, do they?
I am not going to do that because as much as I despise the Patriots, they are just a fabulous football team and an amazing franchise who makes smart choices. And for me right now, the Eagles are going to be the sacrificial lamb. I think this could be a close game, but I think it'll be down to solid play from the Patriots and grinding them down. I think it's a bit like putting the Eagles into a pestle and mortar and just, you know, gradually just getting rid of them until they turn into a paste. And
an Eagle paste.
Yeah.
This is a Super Bowl 52 revenge game, of course.
Well, Belichick's got a very good memory, hasn't he?
Belichick does. Brady does. Brady's still wound up about the draft and falling down so far. I mean, I think that is something else you got to factor in. Injury-wise, you've got Alshon Jeffrey, Jordan Howard, limited in practice. I think Jeffrey might have even missed practice. So again, let's keep a close eye when the inactives are released, but they're going to need to be at full strength. I think they're given this as the 22nd ranked offense currently in the NFL up against, forget what happened against Baltimore, the best defense in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
Best defense in the NFL right now, the Patriots. Offensively, more question marks. Do you think things are going to start to click? Sanu fits into the offense more. The ground game gets a bit more stability week in, week out. Or do you think you should be concerned, particularly with Brady's performance, which I feel like in recent seasons gets talked about at this stage almost every year, every week. Is he regressing? Yada, yada, yada. But based on what you've seen of the Patriots' offense, particularly in recent weeks, is there cause for concern here?
I don't think so. I think sometimes you just have to adapt in game and figure out what's happening with what Brady's actually seeing, because he's probably got a wider vision than anybody's ever seen on a football field. I read a really interesting article about Tom Brady about 2 months ago about how he has changed his training as he's got older. And I think he is really showing the likes of Lamar Jackson, the likes of Deshaun Watson as well, the fact that when you get older, you can, if you stay healthy and have a really good offensive line in front of you, of course, you can adapt the way that you play. And I think that's what Tom Brady's doing right now. He's not doing the exact same things he did, 10, 12 years ago. What he's doing now is trying to give himself one extra second to try and make a smart choice. And he's not trying to be a Hollywood quarterback. He's not trying to be, well, what Colin Kaepernick was when he had that huge run with San Francisco. He's trying to do things almost just smart without any Hollywood factor.
Yeah.
And is he regressing? I don't think so. I think he's just adapting to what he can actually do as a quarterback at his age right now.
Really, really smart analysis. So who are you picking in this one?
Well, I think the Patriots want that revenge, don't they? And Belichick is probably going to, say to his guys, get this one for the franchise and get us to 9-1. I think they will.
I do as well. I almost had them as my lock of the week, actually, the Patriots and the Eagles. Not quite, because my lock of the week is over 49.5 points in that New Orleans game.
I'm cool with that. Yeah, that's a great show.
Yeah, but Pats on the road, get the win. All right, let's rattle through the rest, because time is against us, Nico. Jags at Colts. Jacoby Brissett, of course, looks like he's going to be back for them on Sunday. Practice fully on Wednesday. T.Y., not so much. He didn't practice. Could be a game time decision there, and that is, you know, a fundamental a negative if he doesn't start for them. The Jags have Nick Foles after the bye week back starting at quarterback, so Minshew mania over for the time being. 4-5, the Jags divisional matchup here, it is all to play for, despite the fact they capitulated at Wembley a couple of weeks back.
Yeah, they did, but the bye week does come into play here, just allowing people to heal a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's 4-5 for Jags and 5-4 for Colts. Now, I watched the Steelers against the Colts and I was not impressed with them. Mm. I thought they were pretty wooden. And I didn't think they were very quick.
Was that the game Brissett went out of?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct. And Hoyer came in and he was all right. But for me, I just think the Jaguars are ready to rebound here and I think they'll get to 5-5.
Interesting. Going for the road win.
I'm going to go for the road win.
Foles goes big. Yeah. I can't find this one really hard to call because it's hard to know how fit Brissett will be. Fit enough to start is different from, you know, playing to near enough full strength on the basis that most NFL players at any one time are not at 100%.
Yeah.
But is Jacoby Brissett going to be 85% or is he going to be 65%? And that for me is the key. So very hard to call. I like your angle, actually. I like the Foles energy going in. The Jags are definitely in must win territory. I can see him getting a road win as well. I'll go with that. I'll go with the Jags road win too. Cowboys at the Lions. Give us a winner and a reason why.
God, these are two frustrating teams, aren't they? You just never know what they're going to do. But
it is probably going to be, to help you out a bit on that, Jeff Driscoll starting as opposed to Matt Stafford. So let's go along on the basis it's Driscoll, not Stafford.
Okay, on that basis, then you probably have to go with a really close game here. Mm. I don't think there's going to be a great deal of points. I think it'll be a couple of lackluster offenses, really. This one's a coin flip.
Mm.
And it could well be the edge of the coin. It could be a draw.
I mean,
the Lions
have
already got one this season, so they might get a second. But I'm gonna go for the Lions only just.
Oh, wow, that could be the Cowboys season done and dusted. I was talking to a Dallas radio host on my radio show on Sunday who was saying that if they don't get to the NFC Championship game this season, Garrett's gone. That's what he said. Yeah, this is a guy who has Jerry Jones on his show, right?
Yeah.
So he's connected. He was saying it is championship or bust. And at 5-4, suddenly the Cowboys season is on its head. I think as a result of that, they get the win. I think they're going to do enough to get to the playoffs, and they have to win this, I think, to do that. If they make the NFC Championship game, it's an altogether different situation. Falcons, Panthers, Atlanta off the back of that big win we talked about against New Orleans, against Carolina, 5-4, still very much in the playoff hunt themselves. Probably without Devontae Freeman, Atlanta, and Austin Hooper as well, I think, is going to be out. I don't think as a result they're going to have enough firepower here for Carolina, which is a playmaking offense, and this Atlanta offense has been, defense, I should say, and this Atlanta offense has been erratic at best, so I can see the Panthers D stepping up and making some big plays in this one at home. And Kyle Allen, to me, despite the loss against Green Bay, looked really composed. I like Kyle Allen a lot. I go Carolina at home on this one.
Yeah, I've got that one as well, and I think the Panthers are just going to be very grateful to be back in the southeast of the United States after what was horrendous conditions. But that's Green Bay football, right?
Yeah.
So I think the Panthers are just going to be happy that it's going to be an extra 10 degrees hotter. Mm. And I like it on the Kyle Allen point. I think he's been backed into a corner. He's got an almost impossible position to replace Cam Newton. But I think he's done a very good job considering what he's got in front of him. And when you've got Christian McCaffrey, you've got every chance. He's got so much power and speed that I think a home win here is very likely.
Love it. A Cardinals at 49ers. Does San Francisco bounce back on a short week after their heartbreaking loss to the Seahawks? Heartbreaking. Well, maybe, I don't know, 49ers fans will be pragmatic about it and say, you know what, we don't care really about the unbeaten run. It actually takes that monkey off our back. There's no pressure. We might look at it that way, but I suppose the manner of defeat, when that game could have gone either way and it was to a divisional rival, they're going to be bitter about it. Do they just shake that off and breeze past the visiting Cardinals?
Well, they've got to do a Taylor Swift, haven't they? They've got to shake it off.
Nice, and Nico,
for me, I think that was just a fabulous game of football to watch. And sometimes you have to have those divisional rivalries come together. and get a little bit of the upset maybe, but I think the 49ers stance of they're not bothered about the undefeated run is the right one. Sometimes you learn more from defeat than you do from a victory, so they can put the small things back into place, and this week they will get the win for me over the Cardinals, who are just too unpredictable.
What was your most heartbreaking loss playing? You look back now and it still winds you up. Like, how did I lose that?
There were two of them. One World Cup final when I was playing for Australia, and I missed two darts to actually win the World Cup.
What was the dart?
One dart a double top and one dart a double 10. The double 10 I thought was in. The double top was nowhere near. But there was another one. I was 5-all in the final of the European Darts Trophy in Stuttgart, and I had three darts a double 12 to win the title. And I'd just beaten Michael van Gerwen in the semi-final, and I'd beaten everybody else as well that week, and I lost to Wes Newton, and the amount of money that guy took out of my pocket, it was ridiculous.
See, you bet you sunk a few in the beer halls of Stuttgart after that.
I was too busy outside just crying into my hands.
Bengals Raiders, surely Raiders, the question is by how many. I think I can't see any argument for the Bengals here, and I think the Raiders make the playoffs. They're 5-4. I've just got a good feeling about them. They've got that mojo going on. I think they roll to 6-4 with an easy win here.
Yeah, again, we were talking about certain players going under the radar, and I think Derek Carr's having a sneaky good season.
Big time.
And the Raiders have made some wise choices. One of them was to cut Antonio Brown, of course. Very, very smart.
Yeah,
because we couldn't do.
Not an easy decision to do.
Not at all.
To make him.
And as far as the Bengals are concerned, I think they know that they've got a serious rebuild coming, so they're making choices based on defeats and mistakes, and it's defeat I expect.
You
and
love
mistakes
watching the Bengals
suffer.
I love
seeing them get beat.
It. They're going to go to 0-10. We're both picking Raiders there, I'm guessing, unless you want to.
Oh no, I'm going Raiders.
No, Bears Rams. Oh boy, not the matchup we thought it would be, of course, at the start of the season. This is both teams in, it would be overstating it to say disarray, but certainly nowhere near where they wanted to be, and really fighting for their lives. I think if either team loses this, whichever team loses this, and let's just tie one of them's going to lose it, whichever team loses this, I think that's probably stick a fork in their season.
Yeah, it's pretty much like the Jags-Colts game, isn't it? Because they've got the same records and they flip it around
exactly,
5-4,
yeah.
4-5. And I think you're absolutely right. At the beginning of the season, when you look at this game, you think, wow, this could be a real sort of prime time kind of game that, you know, could go either way. But for me, I think the Bears have got a real chance here. I think their defense could flatten the quarterback at the Rams because he is susceptible. And
the line's in trouble, and I Gurley's just not there. I mean, we talked a lot about the Rams on the Wednesday show with Mike, and have done a lot this season because they're a fascinating story. So I don't want to repeat too many of those points, but I'm with you. I think, and I'm a big Rams apologist, right? I love them. I love McVay. I think he's brilliant, and I do think Goff is better than many people suggest. Although I accept he's in a funk at the moment. There's no doubt about that. I want the Rams. My heart says LA, and it is in LA. I'm good. I think they come good. I think McVay pulls out a game plan to do just enough because this Bears offense just isn't there either.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really tight. It comes down to the defenses for me between Mac and Donald. And I don't know. I fancy Bears to sneak it.
What on that defensive point, just quickly, the Rams allowing 12.3 points per game since week 7. That's the fewest in the NFL. So bear that in mind against this Trubisky
lead. Bear it in mind.
Nice. That's another fist bump. Finally, we go to Mexico. You ever played in Mexico?
No. I think the closest I got to Mexico was Atlanta.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, that's not too far. Well, the Chiefs take on the Chargers in Mexico, one of the international series games. You've got the Mexico City factor, of course, which, you know, an international location can be a leveler, as we've seen, and can disrupt things. The Chiefs are 3.5-point favorites. So if you look at the Vegas rationale, 3 points is usually what you're given for home field advantage, right? So that is where I have a slight problem. The half point is often quite critical, the sharps tell me, but that's why I have a slight problem here, that really are these teams even pretty much there or thereabouts, is what that line tells me. They're not even at all. I know the Chiefs lost last week. They should have won the game. If their field goal unit hadn't imploded, they would have won that game against Tennessee. And Mahomes had a fine game. He had 400 yards, 3 touchdowns. He looked his normal self. The Chargers I know I've got their ground game going again, and certainly maybe better than their record suggests, but I don't see anything other than a straightforward Chiefs win here.
I don't either, because I think the Chiefs have an elite level of performance in their offense.
Yeah.
If they turn up with their B game, they still win this for me.
Yeah.
And if their defense can hold firm, like the Steelers did in LA against the Chargers, then the Chargers are there to be beaten. I think the fact that this is in Mexico is not going to faze Kansas City whatsoever. I think when they go down there, they're just going to feel this is a great place to play football. Mm. And Kansas have played a lot of international games in the last few seasons,
right.
So they're used to this as a franchise. I think the Chargers are there to be hit, and I think the Chiefs need some sort of bolster after last week, and I think they're ready for that.
I think the Chargers will look at the ground game because Melvin Gordon suddenly appeared again. Look at what Derrick Henry did to the Chiefs and other running backs this season. Let's face it, their run D is their Achilles heel, have done to them this season, and that's where the game I think will be won. If they can really establish that, and Gordon goes big, and they can get that play action moving as well, and Rivers can cause damage there, maybe I see a chance. But I'm not buying it really. Chiefs for me with the road win, and there we are. We've wrapped up week 11 with a number of games. I'd like to point out to our listeners, and indeed a nodding Harry the producer with point spreads as well. So loving your work, Nico. Great to see you, man. Thanks for dropping by.
Anytime. Always a pleasure talking about it.
We have got to work out, because me and you are doing the World Championships together in January for telly, and so we talk a lot of NFL when we're hanging around doing that. But of course, there'll be playoff games going on at some points when we are technically on air. And last year we worked out, and we're going to get in trouble for saying this, we worked out a way of multitasking.
Multi-screening it.
Shall we say. New venue this year, though. We're going to be doing it from the O2, so we've got to work out an angle there. We've got to make sure that we've worked it. Yeah, we've got to, I think maybe a recon trip, checking out.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
Working out where we can stash tablets.
Yes, yeah. I may have to get myself another tablet or bring said laptop.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Okay, I will come tableted up for the World Championship. It'll be great to see you there. Hopefully we'll check in with you beforehand, though, and let's see if your prediction about the Steelers or indeed which way that playoff trajectory will go, let's see how that plays out. So we'll check in with you a little bit later on in the season. If our listeners want to follow you on social media, where are they heading?
They go to TheAsset180 on Twitter, and Instagram is Asset180 without the.
Where did the asset come from?
It was a little jibe from some of my old guys who used to travel with me on the Australian circuit.
Yeah.
We used to have a darts team called the Assassins, and we went over to a tournament in New Zealand, and there was a guy over there called Barry Whitaker, who was one of the best players in NZ, and he said to me after a quarter final one day, which was a qualifier for the Las Vegas Desert Classic, that I was a hell of an asset to the game, and everybody started pointing and saying, oh, look at the asset over there.
Oh, nice.
And then it came out around about the time the Bourne Ultimatum came out as well, and
right,
it was a big thing with unleash the asset,
the
sort
asset
of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that just stuck, and then the dart shirts were made, and then the die was cast.
And you already always had that WWE style. We've talked about this before. You were taking influence from that as well.
Yeah, I'd like to say something really and get it off my chest. Mm. Throughout my career, I never had the opportunity to do what I wanted. I was always kept back by the darts regulation authority.
Did you want to appear through the stage, like a trapdoor, and just appear on stage? Like
I had loads of ideas. T-shirt guns, walk on, come up from the stage as opposed to walk on.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to do things differently, and yes, I pushed the envelope and the line of conduct a little bit with some profanity and things like
that. Bad boy of darts.
But I was someone who turned pages. I'm someone who got people watching whether you like me or not. That's exactly what we've got with Gerwin Price at the minute. It's just, it's fabulous to have someone who is a little bit polarized, just to throw a little bit of cayenne pepper in the mix.
I love the idea of watching you just come in on like Jax DeVille, or if WWE star Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, just tripwire in.
God, can you imagine that?
Well, I love that.
Well,
there's still time, Nico.
I come down with a nosebleed.
Well, it's great to see you, man. Enjoy yourself. Follow Nico on Twitter. We'll push out his handle, of course, as we plug the episode at the NC Show. Is how you follow us. Cracking stuff from Nico. Great to see him. Don't forget, me and the OG back Saturday morning. That pod drops with our daily fantasy picks. Speaking of which, get involved with our show tournament over on Paddy Power Fantasy. It's free to enter. Free to enter. There's a big cash prize pool. Lots of you guys played last week, entered, won some cash. So get involved with that. Fantasy.paddy.com fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show. fantasy.paddypower.com/league/Nat Coombs Show and get your daily fantasy darlings on with me and the OG. We're back on Monday to review all of week 11's action with Nicky Bandini. We'll see you then. Bye for now.